Thank you so much for being here this morning. Do appreciate it. We do have some that are missing. I've mentioned Debbie, I think, is going to be out of town for maybe the next couple of weeks. So we'll remember her. How will I be remembered? When we were younger, there was a prayer that many of us learned. Now lay me down to sleep. I pray the Lord my soul to keep. But if I die before I wake, I pray the Lord my soul to take. And that might sound a little bit morbid when you're thinking about a young child. But there's a valuable lesson, I think, that we can learn from this. From the Old Testament, we learn about a man who believed that. He prayed it, if you will, as an older man. And something said about this man in Hebrews 11:22, where it says, by faith, Joseph, when he was dying, made mention of the departure of the children of Israel and gave instructions concerning his bones. That I have something I want to happen to me after I leave this life, he would say. And it's interesting, of all the things that Joseph did, God wanted this to be remembered about him, so he put it in Hebrews 11, so that we could remember this one thing about Joseph. But yet, there's many things we remember about Joseph that lead up to this. So I'm going to use Joseph and his faith, and maybe then we can look at our own lives and think about our own lives, and how would I want to be remembered if my name was in the 11th chapter of the book of Hebrews? What would he say? What would he say about me? In this statement, though, this one statement about Joseph, they're just volumes of information. I know that many of us have talked about Joseph on several occasions, and I know many lessons have been taught about him, but I want to talk about maybe just from a little different standpoint this morning. First, I want us to look at what prompted Joseph to get to this point, so that he would make them promise to him, give him an oath at the end of his life, that they would, when they left there, take his bones. Because that might just seem so simple to us. Of course he'd want his bones taken from there, right? Why, though? And we can learn much about how we would like to be remembered from him. If you look at this area, they lived in that little area up there of Israel, and then they would end up down in this area of Egypt, in the northern part of Egypt, and they would live there for some time. So as we look at this and we think about that, them ending up down there, how did this all happen? Because here they are, they're in that little area up there in Cana, and there's not very many of them, and God certainly had made a promise to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob concerning that. So let's look at his background. We're going to study from Genesis 37 through 50. And as we look at this most powerful story, and I want to use this in our first assembly, then I want to talk about it some in our second assembly. I hope that I can say some things about this that might help us to want to change how we want to be remembered. Turns out he was the 11th of 12 sons. We know that they also had a sister, but of the 12 sons, he was the 11th one. He was a son of Rachel, and this was, of course, Jacob's favorite wife at this point. And certainly she meant so much to him. And it had been a struggle for her to have any children. And later on, of course, she's going to have Benjamin, and she's going to die shortly after having Benjamin. And that's going to be the end of this part of this. And so that we're going to find that Joseph's not going to see his mother again on this earth. And that's a powerful thing from what's about to happen to him. But we also find in this that there's some favoritism shown to Joseph, and I think it was a result of this. And certainly when he came along, his father treated him very special. We all know about the coat that he was given and all that went with that. And we think about all that would go into his life. And typically, if you've favored someone in life, and in this case a particular child out of multiple children, it affects them very strongly in their life, so that it's very difficult for them to live in such a way that doesn't affect their lives, because we are such a product of our upbringing. And if you don't think you are, just think back about your life when you were younger, and you'll start seeing some things today that you still probably do. But then there were some special dreams given to Joseph. Now, he's a little bit older than Andrew at this point. He's about 17 years old. We don't know for sure exactly when the dreams were given. We know that he will leave when he's about 17. But let's just say that's the age. And he's given some dreams about some sheaves and how he is one of, he doesn't say he's one, but he talks about the rest bowing down to him. The 11 bowing down to him. But then he talks even, tells about another dream, and he goes and he's all happy about this dream because it the sun, moon, and stars, and it's 11 stars, and they all bow down. And so his father recognizes right away, this is not a good thing. His son apparently is letting this go to his head because he's starting to think, I'm going to bow down to him. He recognizes what this dream could possibly mean, and he's thinking, well, you know, maybe. We don't know for sure what he thought, but he certainly didn't like Joseph telling this dream, and he lets him know about it, and he says, you shouldn't be talking about that. So he rebukes him, and he said, shall your mother and I and your brothers bow down to the earth before you? So he understands what this means. So this would be, again, I'm going to point this out so we can get a clear, it's like Andrew going to them and saying, in this case, I've got all you bowing down to me. That's what certainly Jacob took from this, Israel. And he's starting to say, well, wait, this isn't good. And you start to see the mindset, maybe, I don't know what he thought, but maybe he thought, maybe I pitied him a little too much. Who does he think he is? That we're going to bow down to him? But Joseph doesn't know any better. He's all just happy about these dreams that he's receiving. He's a young man and he's happy about it. But it gets to the point where not only this affects them, but they just dislike him. To the point of hatred. They hate him so much. I'm going to tell you how hatred works. It built up inside of them. And then they fed off of each other. And the brothers start looking at him like, really? Do we need him around? In addition to this, at 17 years old, he's told to go check on his brothers. Now, here he is, a spy. The father is saying, well, you go check on them. And so he does. And immediately, they conspire to kill him. That's how far hatred goes. They looked at him and it says they were thinking about ways, let's just get rid of this aggravating brother of ours. Look what he's doing to us. Now, Joseph's not doing anything to them. But in their mind, he is. He is a thorn in their side. And think about it. He's just a younger brother who has told them some dreams, who can't help it because his father has treated him better than the rest. But it says, as they saw him coming, of course, the first thing, look, this dreamer is coming. In their mind's view, it's like he's just thinking in his mind he's going to be over us. What's he thinking? So they have determined they're going to kill him, and Reuben says, wait just a second. Let's think this over. I tell you what, let's put him in a pit. And of course, when they do, they take his coat, and we know about the blood and everything. But Reuben has this thought process in his head that he'll go back and get him and take him back to his father, and everything will be okay. Well, it doesn't quite work out that way, as we know, because when they do all of this, they have this intent. And of course, we know they took the coat back to the father and said that an animal had, they found the coat, and obviously an animal or something had killed him, was their story to the father. And of course, the father doesn't know any different, and he mourns, but he doesn't know what to do about this because he can't find his son. Well, Judah then, another voice of reason, says, well, I'll tell you what, let's do with him while Reuben is gone. He said, let's take him and let's sell him. We'll at least make some money off of him. I'm thinking, I thought this story through, and I've read this many times, and I read it through again, and I was thinking in terms of this as I was putting it together. This is really sad. But you know what? It's really true. This is people. This is identical to us today. Same emotions, same thing goes through it, and the same thing would probably happen in a family today if that could be done the way it was done then. So, here he is. He sold their brother, who had done nothing to them, who had never, to the best of our knowledge, I don't even know when he went back and told his father's thing. All he was telling his father was what they were doing. He was telling the truth about them. They were not good men. And he's just telling the truth to his father. He's not a tattletale. His father's put him in the middle. And he doesn't know any better than to go back and tell what's true. He doesn't deserve any of this. But here he is, this young 17-year-old, and again, just a little older than Andrew, to put it in perspective, is sold. And he's sold into slavery for 20 shekels of silver. Well, they don't keep him. They travel on down. And you remember the map I had up there earlier. They go down into Egypt. So now he's in Egypt, belongs basically to other human beings. does not have his freedom anymore, does not have all the things that he had when he was back home. He has sold a man called Potiphar, as we know. But he becomes very valuable to Potiphar. God is working amazing things in his life, and Potiphar maybe doesn't recognize it's God, but he recognizes something's going on here. Because the more responsibility that he gives to Joseph, the better he has it in his family. I mean, it couldn't get any better than this. And you got to think in Joseph's mind, okay, this is working out pretty well. You know, I don't like this. I'm having to work for this man, and I can't help that. And here I am a slave to him. But you know, it's not a bad life. He was put second in command to the man, the master of the house. It said that the master of the house didn't even know what he owned anymore. That it was all left in the hand of Joseph. That's trust. That's amazing. And Potiphar started just gaining riches like you wouldn't believe, it says. He just started gaining in everything. This had to impress him that this young man comes into my life and all of a sudden I don't even have to do anything and I'm making basically money head over heels. Everything I'm doing just turns to gold. And he loves it. And it's not a problem for him. He prospers. He made overseer. That's a powerful position for a young man. This is a man who's not very old, and he obviously has a lot of ability. He has the ability to run basically a business for this man on his own. That amazes me. Shows us some other things that we'll talk about later. But Potiphar's wife has other designs. She's not real happy, apparently, with her husband, and she decides, you know what? I would love to commit fornication with this young man. She propositions him. She says to him, would you do this? Now, she didn't do this just once. She just didn't come up to him one time and make a suggestion that we could do this. She is strong in this. It is said that she did it day after day after day on a daily basis. I have a question for you. How many of us at that age would say, you know what? Okay, what difference does it make? I'm down here in Egypt, nobody knows me. Look how my brothers treated me. I mean, obviously, God is not in this anymore. Obviously, I'm in a difficult situation. He's obviously a handsome young man. But he refuses. He refuses. How many men at this age? We don't know for sure how old he was at this point. But let's just say he's in his early 20s at this point. How many men could refuse? How many women would refuse in the reverse? He refuses, he says, because he's loyal to the master. He's appreciative of Potiphar treating him as well as he's treated him. That's an amazing thing. Because again, Potiphar might never know. But that's not all he says. He shows his love for God. He said, would I sin against God? Joseph, look where you are. Look what's been done to you. And you still have respect and love for God? And you still respect His law? And you still think that law is more precious than what you're doing? And I want you to understand something. This is not a written law that he has. This isn't something he can just pull out and say, there it is in verse so-and-so or something. This is a young man who's doing God's will on the basis of what he's been taught. And he believes it with all of his heart, just like we discussed in class this morning. He believes that the Word of God is alive and it's powerful. Well, she doesn't like this. She gets vengeance, and as he runs away from her, trying to get away from her, she grabs his coat and accuses him of trying to lie with her. And so Potiphar's very upset, as obviously he would be. He believes his wife, and he believes this young man who he's put in control of everything is now trying to not only take over everything else in his life, but suddenly in his mind, he also is trying to take my wife. He has him put in prison. But again, it is amazing. Could it get any worse? Well, he starts gaining favor with the man who runs the prison. The man who runs the prison sees something totally different than this young man. And I would argue it isn't just because God is making that happen. It's because of his love for God that's making that happen. He's living in such a way that this man sees it and he understands there's something totally different about this man. This young man who's in his 20s is now in my prison and look what's happening. And he starts noticing how things are working really well for him. And how things are starting to work well in the prison. And he puts him in charge of that. And he puts him over all the prisoners. Can you imagine? And it works out well for him. But Pharaoh gets upset with the baker and the butler, the chief ones, and he puts them in prison. And they're there with Joseph, and they're talking to Joseph one day, and they both have dreams that we know about. And I won't go into the dreams, but they have these unique dreams. Each one has a different dream. And we know about that. And Joseph tells them the meaning of the dreams. Which goes back to dreams. The original ones he had at the beginning. Keep that in mind. The butler will be promoted, but the baker will hang. And in 3 days, both of them are going to be out of prison. But it's not going to be good for one of them. And the other one actually is going to do much better. But the butler, who had made a promise to him that he would let Pharaoh know about him, totally forgets. Now you might think, okay, that was temporary. Yeah, it was temporary for 2 years. It says a full 2 years goes by. Here's Joseph in prison again thinking, what would you think? How would you like to be remembered on this as one who forsook God at this point and said, look, this is enough. I've had enough. Could life get any worse? Could this possibly get any worse? Well, Pharaoh has a dream about the cows. The 7 fat ones and the 7 real ugly skinny ones. And the real ugly skinny ones eat the 7 fat ones. And the same way with the stalks. And so what we have in this picture is something that is not normal in nature. Something that does not normally happen. But Pharaoh knew this is totally different from the other dreams that he's had. Well, now we find that Joseph is about 30 years old. And now he's been in Egypt for 13 years. And for those 13 years, I would argue that all of life has not been good. This is not a situation that I'm sure he thought of when he was Andrew's age, that by the time I'm 30, I will have been in prison. I will have been falsely accused of things. I will have my brothers will have wanted to kill me. I will be totally away from my family and no one's come to even to look for me. Well, he cleans up. He shaves before he goes before Pharaoh. And I've thought about this a lot. That tells you a lot about his character. Doesn't it? This young man understood to present himself well before Pharaoh, he needed to change his appearance from what he looked like in prison. He understood that need. And for you young people that don't understand about appearance, do you know what they do when they get a prisoner or someone who's convicted of something or will bring them to trial? You ever notice how they're all cleaned up? And how they try to give them the best appearance they can before the jury and stuff. They don't want to see them the way they actually looked. And he understands this. He has great respect for this man. He understands who Pharaoh is. And he reveals the dream. 7 years of plenty, 7 years of famine. He's given charge. And here it is again. He's made second in command now. He's been second in command to Potiphar. He's been second in command to the man who ran the prison. But now, you remember that country, how huge it is? He's been made second in command of a whole country. The most powerful country, probably on the face of the earth at that time. What would you do with that? What would you do with that power? Would you use it to your benefit? How many people have we seen fall? They get into power, he's only 30 years old. Wouldn't you take advantage of that? Wouldn't you understand the power that you have and know that you could do anything you wanted to do? The Pharaoh would back you up because he's so dependent on you at this point because you've told him what the dream is and you've told him if you don't do this, the whole country could go down. Can you imagine the power behind that statement? That if you don't gather up things in this first 7 years, that 7 years is going to wipe you out. Do you know how much they knew about famines? A lot. Do you know how often this happened? Frequently. They weren't always prepared for it. They lost a lot of people during these famines. Their soldiers died sometimes. Their people died sometimes. They couldn't take care of this. And here you have a man who's saying, I can tell you what the future is. Now, give me anything I want. That's not what he said. We're going to talk about that later. So the 7 years pass of good harvest and plenty to eat. Joseph instructs the Egyptians to start storing this up, start keeping it. We are going to have to prepare for the future. We have to think of it like the Bible talked about the ants preparing. And all of these creatures know how to prepare. You've got to think through it. And it turns out it's the only country on the face of the earth at that time that's preparing. That understands and knows this. It's the only one God revealed it to. And then the 7 years of famine start. And now you have two men who control the world's supply of food. What power? Wouldn't you use it? Well, Pharaoh does to some extent. You have to pay him for this food. You see, because God did this, it made them stronger. They're going to become quite a stronger nation than they've ever been before. If we had to go to another country to get our food, we would understand this. If we had to give up pretty much everything we had so we could eat, that's what people were doing. Up in Israel, up in Cana at this point, Jacob and his family are running out of food. What are they going to do? Well, they hear about Egypt. They hear about there's a man down there and there's a Pharaoh down there that will actually sell us some food. Will give us food. So he gives them some money to go down there and they take their bags. And he sends ten of his sons down for the food. And of course, Benjamin stays home. We know how this works. When they get there, they have to approach Joseph. And here they are before Joseph and they don't know him. But I'm going to tell you why he recognized them. You know, he's gained some age. I'm certain he didn't look anything like they would have pictured him to look. And so now all of a sudden, we find that here he is in control. He can do anything he wants. He's powerful. He's stronger than any other person other than Pharaoh on the face of this earth. He's got his brothers there. Well, he ends up, he accuses them of being spies. After he recognizes them and he has them put in prison for 3 days. He asks them a bunch of questions, which he already knew the answers to. But he asks them, how's the old man, basically? And that's the way he put it. And how's that younger, brother of yours, after he coaxed them into letting him, they told him everything. I mean, they were just rattling off everything, scared to death. And you know what their first thought was? You remember how many years have passed now? He's 37 years old. 20 years passed. And you know what their first thought was? What they did to their brother. You ever gone through life and something happens to you and the first thought in your mind, something happened? Isn't that amazing how we do that? How we can put things together and we start thinking, wow. Yeah. So he says, go back. Bring Benjamin this time. Doesn't mention him by name, but bring that younger brother. I want you to bring him back if you expect me to not believe he's a spy. Well, they come back. Of course, he's put Simeon there as in jail so that they will come back. And so they go back with presents and they go back with Benjamin. It takes them a long time to convince Jacob. Jacob's almost willing to give up Simeon. He really is. He just can't stand the thoughts now of losing Benjamin as well. That's the only other child he has from Rachel. I can't imagine what this is like to him. I can't imagine. When they get ready to leave this time, of course we know the story. Joseph put his silver cup, in Benjamin's sack. And so they come back, but he sends the people after him. And finally, just to bring it to a close, he reveals himself to them. And when he reveals himself to them, of course he cries and they cry. And I thought through all this and I thought, this is an amazing man. Just amazing when we talk about him. I would want to be remembered like him. I'm not sure that I can be. But now he's 39 years old. And he's still not a very old man, but he's around Cody's age. He's gone from Andrew to Cody in this story at this point. That's amazing. That's a lot of history there. That's a lot of things that have happened. And of course we know that Jacob and his family end up moving down to Egypt. And Jacob dies there at the age of 147. But Jacob says to them before he dies, he wants his body taken and buried with his fathers. But the one we're talking about is Joseph. Joseph then dies at 110 years old. He was in Egypt for 93 years. He only got to live in Cana for 17 years. 93 of the 110, he lived down in Egypt. That's where his personal family was. And that's where his home had become. But it hadn't. Genesis 50, 22 through 26. So Joseph dwelt in Egypt, he and his father's household, and Joseph lived 110 years. Joseph saw Ephraim's children to the third generation. The children of Machir, the son of Manasseh, was also brought up on Joseph's knees. Ah, what a beautiful thing. The children, the grandchildren, the great-grandchildren. Joseph said to his brethren, I am dying, but God will surely visit you and bring you out of this land, of the land of which he swore, to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob. Then Joseph took an oath from the children of Israel, saying, God will surely visit you, and you shall carry up my bones from here. So Joseph died, being 110 years old, and they embalmed him, and he was put in a coffin in Egypt. Now, why would this be the greatest thing of all? We're going to study that in the second lesson. Today, though, to switch a little bit, we gather for an entirely different reason. We truly gather here today for the purpose of remembering the one who died for us. As great as Joseph was, Jesus Christ. As I've always said, it's always a contrast if you're talking about him and someone else, because he lived his life to perfection. And he instituted a memorial for us. He said that we should do it in remembrance of him. Now, it should be easy to remember him while we're partaking of this. I mean, we talk about his life, we talk about his death, we talk about his burial, we talk about his resurrection. So as we partake of this, it should be easy to do so. But I want to drop back for just one moment. We remember him. But how will I be remembered? We've remembered him for 2,000 years. Actually, pre-remembered him through all the prophecies. And now they could remember him. Will I be remembered for my faith in his promise of a new rest, as we've discussed? In Revelation 14, 13, then I heard a voice from heaven saying to me, write, blessed are the dead that die from now on. Yes, they shall rest from their labors, and their works will follow them. There's a rest. Have I, like Joseph, asked for my bones to be taken, figuratively speaking, to be with God eternally when I depart this life? Philippians 3, 20 and 21, for our citizenship's in heaven, from which we also eagerly wait for the Savior, the Lord Jesus Christ, who will transform our lowly body that it may be conformed to His glorious body, according to all working by which He is able to even subdue all things to Himself. I'm asking, is that how I'll be remembered, as one who wanted mine to be taken somewhere else? The only way that'll be possible is if I have a faith like Joseph, and it's strong enough to cause me to obey His words. Are you a Christian today? Think seriously about it. Be a Joseph. Stand up for what you believe. Do what you know is right. Become a Christian. If you're a Christian and you aren't living as you should, change your life. Pray or have someone to pray for you for those sins. Completely repent of them and confess them to God. Would you please stand?